Today is Thursday, December 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, U.S. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi formally asked the Judiciary Committee to draw up articles of impeachment against U.S. President Donald Trump.
His wrongdoing strikes at the very heart of our Constitution, a separation of powers, three co-equal branches, each a check and balance on the other.
Plus, China says the U.S. must cut tariffs if Washington wishes to reach a trade deal. And how research on dogs may help us reverse the aches and pains of aging. Those stories and more are all coming up next. U.S. President Donald Trump tweeted Thursday morning, "If you're going to impeach me, do it now, fast, so we can have a fair trial in the Senate, so that our country can get back to business." Addressing the nation, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi moved to do just that.
The president's actions are a profound violation of the public trust. The president's actions have seriously violated the Constitution, especially when he says and acts upon the belief, Article 2 says I can do whatever I want. No, his wrongdoing strikes at the very heart of our Constitution, a separation of powers, three co-equal branches, each a check and balance on the other, a republic. Our democracy is what is at stake. The president leaves us no choice but to act because he is trying to corrupt once again the election for his own benefit. The president has engaged in abuse of power, undermining our national security and jeopardizing the integrity of our elections. His actions are in defiance of the vision of our founders and the oath of office that he takes to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Sadly, but with confidence and humility, with allegiance to our founders and a heart full of love for America, today I am asking our chairman to proceed with articles of impeachment.
The White House responded via Twitter that the Democrats should be ashamed and that President Trump has done nothing wrong but govern the country. On Wednesday, House Judiciary Chair Jerry Nadler heard testimony from four legal scholars on what they believe the U.S. Constitution says about the standards for impeaching and removing a president from office. And now to dive deeper into these hearings and what today's announcement may mean for Americans, we're joined on the phone by Augusta University Professor of Political Science, Craig Albert. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thanks for having me.
So today's announcement, did you see that coming?
I did not see it coming this quickly, especially only after one day of public testimony in the Judiciary Committee. I thought it would be at least a few more days or a few more public testimonies, but that was a shocker to be sure.
Now, I wanted to get your take. Various polling organizations have been following this case as it moved through the House, and the numbers have kind of hovered around 50% moving for the impeachment and removal of the president, and then almost an equal number opposed to that. What do you think both the Intelligence Committee hearings, which was analogous to the grand jury portion, as well as the one hearing in the Judicial Committee thus far, is going to do to the American zeitgeist and their opinion on impeachment?
It's going to make them tired of the process. So far, the only thing that has really been accomplished in both the committee hearings have been more polarization. So if you're a Democrat, you think that your case has been solidified by these testimonies. If you're a Republican, you think your case has been solidified by these testimonies. So not much has been achieved in actual swaying one side over the others here. So I don't think much has been given. And I actually think, though, the Republicans kind of might have won yesterday because there was not much more evidence brought to the table in the Judiciary Committee. It was just a testimony by various lawyers trying to make the historical case for impeachment. And that, of course, is a subjective, though informed analysis of the impeachment process and what can be an impeachable offense and how it would work. Not much was given to really as evidence to say that, yes, these are impeachable points. They were just educated opinions once again, and nothing solid.
Chairman Nadler of the Judiciary Committee has signaled that on Monday there will be another hearing where the counsels, both for the Democrats and the Republicans, will be invited to give their evidence on the impeachment hearings conducted in the Intelligence Committee, as well as other committees in the House. How do you foresee the next phase now that Pelosi has called for articles of impeachment to be drawn up? What kind of speed do you think the Judiciary Committee will move, given that we're approaching the Christmas recess for the House and the Senate?
I think they want to do it as quickly as possible. I've read reports that they want it before the Christmas break, which I don't see how they could possibly do it that quickly to get these articles of impeachment through the Judiciary Committee. But if they don't get it done by the break, it has to be done in January for the Democratic timeframe. They want this as quickly as possible to move to the Senate, not only to get rid of the president as quickly as possible. They said, Pelosi said it yesterday, this is an emergency crisis that we have to get rid of the president now. So that indicates that they're going to do it as quickly as possible. On the other side, President Trump also wants it out of the House immediately, because most people understand that the articles of impeachment are going to pass the Judiciary Committee. They're going to pass the House based on partisan lines, and so it's going to move over to the Senate. And this is what the president wants as well, because he believes his case will be made clearer and they will not vote to remove him, and he thinks that'll help his election campaign. So both of the parties are assuming that the process is going to help them in the upcoming presidential election.
Now, once things, should the House pass the articles of impeachment, they'll move over to the Senate, where the trial will be governed by the Supreme Court Chief Justice there, with, you know, the president being able to make his case, as well as the House acting as the prosecutor in the Senate chambers. The White House has said that they haven't been given due process and been able to, you know, provide evidence. What do we know about what happens during a Senate trial in impeachment? And we have about a minute left.
Well, the president will have more rights in the Senate than he does in the House, because the House, of course, is dictated by the Speaker of the House and how everything is going to work. So there's not much laid out in the Constitution of how this is going to happen. Because of the way the Senate is structured, I think the president will have a fairer, at least more chance to give what he wants to give. On the other side, the House has invited him to come to these and publicly testify as well to the Intelligence and the Judiciary Committee as well. And he said he doesn't want that because he doesn't think he'll be treated fairly. So he thinks he'll be treated more fairly in the Senate. I'm not sure if he'll be treated more fairly in the Senate. I think he'll be treated by more Republicans in a particular way in the Senate, because it's a Republican-controlled branch of Congress. So I don't think he'll get removed from office. I think there'll be I'm not sure if there's going to be any really smoking gun evidence by the Democrats either, and I think that's really what they need for the Republicans in the Senate to vote to remove him from office. And I think they would have released that if they had it by now.
Craig Albert is a professor of political science at Augusta University. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Yemeni security officials say clashes in the country's south between Saudi-backed Yemeni government troops and separatists backed by the United Arab Emirates killed separatist commander Salem Awad al-Shahami and wounded seven sectionist fighters. It's the first fighting since two sides signed a power-sharing deal last month to end their fighting that erupted over the summer. Pirates have attacked a Greek-owned oil tanker off Nigeria and kidnapped 19 Indian and Turkish crew members. A statement Wednesday by the owner of the Hong Kong-based managers of the Nave Constellation ship says it was attacked late Tuesday after it departed the Bondi offshore terminal in fully laden condition. The International Maritime Bureau says the Gulf of Guinea now accounts for about 82% of crew kidnappings in the world. South Korean President Moon Jae-in said Thursday the global diplomatic push to defuse the nuclear standoff with North Korea is at a critical crossroads, and called for China to continue serving a positive role in denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula and stabilizing peace. Moon made the comments during a meeting with Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi at Seoul's presidential Blue House. Wang made his first visit in 4 years amid efforts to patch up relations damaged by South Korea's deployment of a U.S. anti-missile system China perceives as a security threat. North Korea threatened Thursday to resume insults of U.S. President Donald Trump and consider him a dotard if he keeps using provocative language such as referring to its leader as Rocket Man. Choi Soon-hui, the first vice foreign minister, issued a warning via the state media days after Trump spoke of a possible military action toward the North and revived his Rocket Man nickname for North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. China says the U.S. must cut tariffs in order to reach a trade deal. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has more.
China's Commerce Ministry says Washington must roll back punitive tariffs on Chinese imports if the two sides reach a trade deal, indicating Beijing is sticking to its position ahead of another possible December 15 duty increase. The two sides are negotiating details of a Phase 1 trade agreement announced by President Donald Trump in October. Beijing said last month the U.S. side agreed to roll back some tariffs. But Trump has dismissed that. The Beijing ministry has said negotiators are in close communication. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Speaking at the NATO leaders' meeting in London Tuesday, U.S. President Donald Trump said he might put off finalizing the trade deal long into 2020.
I have no deadline, no. In some ways, I think it's better to wait till after the election. You want to know the truth? I think in some ways it's better to wait till after the election with China. But I'm not going to say that. I just think that. I just tell you, in some ways, I like the idea of waiting till after the election for the China deal. But they want to make a deal now, and we'll see whether or not the deal's going to be right. It's got to be right.
Mr. Trump's comments sent U.S. markets falling on Tuesday. Investors had been hoping that the United States and China would avert an escalation of their trade tensions. U.S. officials have previously said a deal could happen this year, depending on China. The prolonged dispute between the world's two top economies has roiled financial markets, dented global growth, and disturbed factory floors. Data on Monday showed U.S. manufacturing activity contracted again, causing Wall Street to pull back from record highs. Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping had planned to meet and sign a preliminary Phase 1 trade deal at the Asia-Pacific Leaders Summit in Chile in mid-November, but that summit was canceled due to mass protests. And you're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers using a variety of space and ground-based telescopes say they have spotted a very rare system of three monster black holes that are on the path to a spectacular collision and merger. The triple black hole system was discovered at the center of three galaxies that had merged with each other. This trinary system is said to be located about a billion light years away and are each separated by distances that range between 10,000 to 30,000 light years. Astronomers say they found evidence that the giant black holes are actively feeding on surrounding material. The system was first spotted by the ground-based Sloan Digital Sky Survey in New Mexico. NASA space telescopes such as WISE, Chandra, Hubble, and NuSTAR were also used to gather data on the triple black hole system. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. China's Huawei has mounted a legal challenge against the United States Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, after the body designated the technology giant as a security threat and moved to bar it from a government subsidy program. Reuters' Ryan Brooks has that story.
Huawei has fired back at the FCC for cutting off its sales in the U.S. On Thursday, the tech giant said it's suing the U.S. telecoms regulator. Last month, the FCC branded Huawei and another Chinese tech company, ZTE, as national security threats. It also voted to block them both from a subsidy program that rural U.S. carriers depend on to buy Huawei's gear. The company's chief legal officer said the FCC had not provided enough evidence to say Huawei is a threat.
Banning a company like Huawei just because we studied in China, this does not solve any cybersecurity challenges. This decision, just like the entity list decision in May, is based on politics, not security.
Last month, FCC Chairman Ajit Pai said the rule was not a political issue. The commission argued Huawei's risk lies in the company's ties to Beijing and Chinese laws requiring companies like it to assist in intelligence activities. It's unclear when the rule will take effect, but it's the latest U.S. step against Huawei. In May, President Donald Trump put the company on the U.S. trade blacklist, also citing security concerns. That came after Washington levied criminal charges against it. The U.S. has also been lobbying allies to ban Huawei from their 5G networks. And Reuters reported last week that the U.S. is now weighing up ways to stop more products with American tech from being shipped to the company.
And that was Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks. When asked about Huawei involvement in Portugal, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that Washington is trying to make clear to its international partners the risks, but that every nation must make its own decision.
The leadership in Europe has a responsibility to ensure that the networks of which European private citizens' information flows are secure and safe and trusted, and this information won't flow to places that information ought not to be.
The United States and other governments worry that technology companies located in countries with governments like China's could be subject to state influence, making the networks insecure. President Donald Trump signed an executive order back in May that bars American companies from selling software and components to companies that pose a national security risk. But the administration has granted a series of limited reprieves to restrictions on buying Huawei components. Scores of migrants who swam through the Atlantic Ocean waters to safety from a capsized boat were receiving care Thursday in Mauritania after 58 others drowned in one of the deadliest disasters this year among people making the perilous journey to Europe. Laura Lungrati, chief of the mission in West Africa, in the West African nation with the UN Migration Agency, told the Associated Press that the boat, which left Gambia a week ago, had been carrying at least 150 individuals, including women and children. It was headed towards Spain's Canary Islands, but tried to approach the Mauritanian coast to get fuel and food. The first week of the COP25 climate conference is nearly completed, and delegates have been debating key issues, including carbon trading and how wealthy developed nations can help poor countries reduce emissions and counter the effects of a changing climate. Journalist Lisa Bryant is in Madrid and spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson.
So this conference is called COP25. It's one of the annual conferences that the UN is hosting that's looking at climate change and its impact in the environment. And it's basically almost 200 nations are here with representatives. We had some high-level people, a few heads of state that were here, and some major environmentalists. And basically, it's setting the stage for next year, which is supposed to be a big key meeting. This is a time where countries are being pushed to increase their agreements to cut greenhouse gas emissions. It's like every 5 years since this major Paris Climate Pact, which is the only climate agreement that countries around the world have come to agreement. What's at stake for the moment in terms of the agreements are two major things, but there are other things as well. So one of them is emissions trading, and that's what people call Article 6. That is essentially a question where, let's say, bigger, richer, more polluting nations can offset their emissions by financing, let's say, development or green projects in poorer countries. They need to finalize the rules, and there are a lot of sticking points that are very technical, but some of it is stuff like double counting, so that you're not, you know, overcounting the amount of compensation that you're doing. So they want to have very efficient, workable rules. The next major issue that they'll be talking about, or they are talking about, these delegates, is compensating poor countries for the damage and coping with climate change. And many poor countries say, hey, we're not the big emitters. It's, you know, the big rich industrialized nations, yet we are having to pay the consequences. But broadly, they want to finalize rules to really implement this last 2015 Paris Agreement.
Now, on the 2015 Paris Accord, the United States under President Trump plans to withdraw from the accord effective next year. How does that play into discussions here?
The Trump administration has said that it is pulling out of the agreement by November 4th of next year. That will be a day after the U.S. elections. Washington says essentially that, you know, workers and businesses are paying an unfair burden for the cost of, you know, upholding the U.S. agreement on cutting emissions. However, they do say that they will continue to be active participants in meetings such as this one, even if they aren't formally, delegates there. But apparently, according to some reports, the United States here has played a somewhat useful role in terms of the negotiations. It has really been helpful, according to some of the negotiators. However, the loss of the U.S. is huge, according to environmentalists and to delegates, because the United States is the second biggest greenhouse gas emitter. At the same time, a number of cities and states in America are implementing their own sort of climate change policies. So they're saying we're still in, and they're coming with delegates next week. For example, we already saw congressional Democrats coming in this week with the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who's also saying, hey, we're still in.
And that was Lisa Bryant speaking to International Edition's Kate Pound Dawson. Russian President Vladimir Putin says Moscow is prepared to immediately extend a pivotal nuclear arms reduction pact with the United States. The pact, which was signed in 2010 by U.S. President Barack Obama and then Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, limits each country to no more than 1,550 deployed nuclear warheads and 700 deployed missiles and bombers. Putin and other Russian officials have repeatedly voiced concern about Washington's reluctance to discuss the treaty's extension. Bleak news from the Centers for Disease Control shows that Americans are dying younger and that life expectancy in the United States is down. It may be time to call in the dogs to the rescue. VOA's Carol Pearson reports that new research shows dogs may help us reverse the aches and pains of aging.
Dogs are so attuned to humans that many people think of them as family. Sandy Schrager fits in that category.
I can't imagine, you know, my life without them. So they're just a central point part of my life.
Come on, girl. Let's go.
According to a pet owner's survey, there are some 90 million pet dogs in the United States. The University of Washington is recruiting 10,000 of them for a study on aging. Professor Daniel Promislow at the University School of Medicine explains.
The goal is to follow dogs for their entire lives, young, old, big, small, males, females, all dogs all around the U.S., to understand how the biology and the environment shape healthy aging in dogs.
The University of Washington, which is on the west coast of the U.S., is partnering with veterinarians like Dr. Kate Creevy at Texas A&M University.
By studying aging in pet dogs living in human environments, we can learn things that will translate to human health as we age in a shorter period of time, and will also directly benefit companion dogs along the way, which is extremely important to me as a veterinarian.
Dogs and humans age in much the same way. They have a similar genome and get the same diseases as they age. Cancer is a big one. As pets, dogs share our environment, so they're exposed to the same toxins as their owners. Researchers plan to examine the dog's lifestyle factors that also affect humans, such as diet, activity level, and where the dog lives, in addition to genetics and medical history. Matt Caberlin is one of the researchers at the University of Washington. He says one of the goals is to find out how to prevent age-related diseases.
Traditionally, in medicine, we have waited until people are sick, and then we try to do something about it. We try to cure their disease, or we try to at least alleviate the symptoms. The goal here is really to keep dogs and people healthy as long as possible before they get sick. And I think that this is kind of a really important aspect of targeting the biology of aging directly rather than targeting individual diseases as they happen.
The researchers plan to make the study's findings available to all scientists. One day, age-related cancers or even dementia will be a thing of the past. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, engineer Patrick Dalle, and managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, thank you very much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.